It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective. The Coaching Perspective with Master Certified Business Coach Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be with you here in studio today, and welcome to today's episode of the Coaching Perspective Radio Show. I'm a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation, and I've been coaching leaders and their teams for 21 years, helping them to clarify their objectives and reach their goals. And if you'd like to know more about my coaching service, just go to the website, thecoachingperspective.com. Well, our guest for today is Camber Hill, and he's going to be talking about coaching from white-collar executives to T-shirt millennials. Wow. You know, if I had to put a label on what Camber does, I would say he's a life coach, but that doesn't really tell the whole story. Camber says he was born to do what he does. He didn't take a class to learn how to be a business owner or become a successful executive or to become a life coach. He says he invented it. He tells us that he has a PhD in results, which is why he has private clients who've been with him for up to 28 years. Well, we'll find out more. Welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio Show, Camber.
Thank you.
Hey, it's a pleasure to have you here today.
I'm excited. This is fabulous.
Well, you know, and excited is a shortcoming. The first time I talked to you, you said yes right away and jumped right on it. I mean, it's like you were waiting to be on radio.
I'm a yes man.
Well, look, tell us a little bit about what you did before what you're doing now. Give us a little bit of the background.
Okay, so I began entrepreneurial, you know, from throwing papers for the Tribune to make a dollar a day, up to my first enterprise was a nonprofit organization, which is a silly thing to do when you're first starting out. It's much better to do profit. By 21, I had a small business in Newport Beach called Shazam Entertainment, which is not likened to Shazam on our cell phones.
Okay.
So I specialized in magicians, psychics, and belly dancers for executive parties and whatnot. And then I moved into the software business, and I partnered up with Mainstream Data Systems. We were one of the first turnkey systems to supply the auto repair service industry. In the midst of all that, I began, I don't even know, Doug, where it started necessarily, but numerology crept in while I at Shazam Entertainment, and people began to seek my advice, business owners. With my, you know, 20, 25-year-old brain, mature, sophisticated, ambitious people began to ask me to sit down for advice. And so really out of the smoke and flames of being a young entrepreneur, I started a reputation as a numerologist.
Okay. I'm not even sure what a numerologist is.
I'm not either. But now I have a much better idea. So numerology is a branch of knowledge of that was, you know, founded thousands of years ago by a mathematician. And what he discovered was that human beings, once on the day that they're born, on the month, the day, and the year, just based on some simple numbers, yeah, you could actually begin to understand the weaknesses and the strengths that a person will endure, or that they will polish and sharpen, or that they will want to ignore. There's a lot of secrets about the way that we feel and that we think that are actually buried into these numbers that have, I call them personalities.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah, and then there are common things that no matter, there's only, in numerology, there's only nine single digits, 1 through 9, and then there's 11, 22, and 33. Just on those numbers alone, each person is kind of like a recipe. It's like baking a recipe, and all these numbers have certain ways of playing themselves out, and it's how they end up in combinations. So, for some incredible reason, I became keenly able to sit with a person just based on those numbers in front of me, and a dialogue would begin.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, at 21, you didn't have a ton of experience behind
you. I did not.
Yeah.
I did not. And the people seeking my help were much more educated, well-rounded, traveled, However, the things behind most of us, especially the more decades we're alive, there are the elementary parts of us. And I was able to unearth those. You could say in this day and age, I would hack. You know, I would hack into the heart and soul of the person in front of me who was troubled by some circumstance, or they were just ambitiously after something particular, expanding business, getting the board of directors more on their side, wheeling in their children who had got a little bit out of control, or themselves, their spouse. So it's all relationship related for the most part, which I do.
Okay.
It's understanding the spark and the flame behind the relationships and then managing them with some grace, not stumbling, but gracefully managing the relationships.
All right. And then where'd you go from there?
Well, I did it up until 30, where I actively, did these businesses. And then I went into corporate America because I thought, well, if I can manage to do this with my private people, then why don't I just take this, information, this wisdom, shall we say, and go into corporate America? So I did that for a decade. Working in television and in radio, and then finally in the IT world by the time I was 40. So at that point, that wasn't really a great scene for me. Cubicles, they're fun, but...
You're not a cubicle
I'm
guy.
Not a,
I mean, we don't know each other that well, but
right?
I can tell that right away.
I'm too loud, Doug.
You're bouncing off the wall, too.
Right? So I'm better out in the fresh air doing my own shtick and helping others who might be in a cubicle figure out how best to handle it. But, at one point, there's a taboo, Doug, it's really kind of a bummer, quite frankly. But I could be sitting with the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, or a much smaller business that's prosperous, and just the fact that numerology sounds a little spooky, or it could be associated with astrology or any other type of esoteric kind of thing, they may get the riches from it, but God forbid that anybody working under them should know about that. So I made a decision that I was going to distance myself from that. Why not just use my box of tools and begin to develop a serious reputation as a coach? A coach didn't even live at the time when I started.
When was this?
Well, at 21, in 1983, there wasn't words like coaching.
Yeah,
you either a consultant or you work for somebody. And a consultant usually meant nobody wanted to work with you anymore because you were too old and you had to come up with a new title for it, But that was then, this is now. So I had to use other monikers and divide, ways to explain myself, but now I'm free and clear of that. And now those little tools are things that are kept to me in order to provide me with insight into my client and get them to their ultimate performance and their objectives.
Okay.
Did that make sense?
Yes, it did. It did. No, it did. And you shared it with me before, and it made sense again. So that brings you up to then sort of leaving those entrepreneurial ventures behind, moving into, let's say, life coaching. Catch us up from there.
Okay. So, primarily, I will attest that in the early days of my practice, the person that was most likely to look outside the box, Doug, and do something other than standard practice for solving their problems were women. Very smart women who knew. I think women, just by virtue of their gender, and because a lot of women become mothers, they're entrepreneurial. I believe that women are naturally entrepreneurial. And if you're naturally entrepreneurial, then you don't stay on the ordinary road. You choose different ways in which to solve your problems. You have to when you're learning on the fly, right? Well, therefore, women who became into powerful positions were looking for ways to solve their banking issues, how to move the bank into international flavor, how to get their human capital into proper working conditions in better ways. So they would use it strategically, but that went up until about 2012.
Okay.
And then I saw this incredible change. Like, out of nowhere, suddenly men were coming out from behind the curtain and looking like their contemporaries were, the women, were starting to not feel like they had to look and do things in just a certain kind of way in order to keep your respect, and especially younger men, mind
okay.
you. They really leaned into it, and they started reaching out to me without any, luggage or preconceived notions that seeking coaching would diminish their authoritative capability. It's become a lot more acceptable that no matter who we are, men and women who are in leadership roles, you better seek some coaching.
You know, I hadn't really thought about it, but I would kind of agree with your observation in that I have found women more likely to be involved in life coaching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Men may be more willing or tendency to go to business coaching,
mm-hmm.
but a little reticent to go to life coaching. And I've never explored why that is,
mm-hmm.
but it's sort of an observation, no statistical data on it.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with that observation.
Yeah, and not only, Doug, like with what you're saying, the field in itself, life coaching, if I go online on YouTube or any other, on the net to try to search out coaching, the population of females in the role opposed to males is gigantic, and men are dwarfed in it. But that's changing.
Yeah, it is. And I have a theory about that, and this is strictly a theory, and that is that having been in coaching for over 20 years,
yeah.
in the early days of coaching, very few coaches could make a full-time living
mm-hmm.
off of coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I saw in those days was a lot of women in coaching
mm-hmm.
who weren't totally dependent on their income mm-hmm. as a coach for supporting the family.
Right, right.
They were either a secondary income or it was a hobby. I don't mean that they weren't serious, good coaches, but
right.
they weren't as financially motivated by
right.
the business as men were. Now,
right.
like you say, that's changed, and coaching, you know, is a very respectable business today in terms of you can make a living at it.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Thank goodness gracious. Yeah, right?
If my wife's listening, we're making a living at it.
Yeah, right? yeah. It's all yours. Anything you need is yours.
Yeah,
it's fascinating. I'm so glad to be my age and to have been, you know, not only did I watch black and white come in, or I should say color. I didn't see black and white come in. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
I just gave myself 30.
You remember the talkies when they first came?
Well, yeah, of course I do.
Yeah.
No, God, I don't remember that. But just, you know, watching the progress and watching it exponentially in the last 5 years alone has been magnificent. That people are leaning into their, you know, you can be, vulnerability used to be looked at like a weakness.
Yes.
And Doug, I got into double trouble when I was in leadership positions and I would go to my boss and if I walked in and said, hey, how you feeling today, John? Why you ask me how I'm feeling, Camber? Well, because how you're feeling is going to determine how my work day is going to go. That might be one reason. But God forbid you should ask that. You could say, what are your plans for the day? Right, the languaging of sensitivity or feelings used to be, you don't want to do that, you know? So I would probably unnerve people because my questions, my specific question in any casual conversation was about the raw you, not your identification, not your shoes and your car. I'm not asking about your shoes. I'm asking how you are and what's going on. And tell me what's going on, because I'm going to know if you're trying to bluff me out. And there's nothing worse than somebody trying to bluff and somebody
yeah.
telling you that you're
yeah.
bluffing. It just gets worse, right? But today, vulnerability is an asset. Vulnerability, intuition, keen passion for what you're doing, harnessing it, managing it, and doing something strategically to enhance your life and the life of the people that you're dealing with is the objective, and it's not looked down on any further.
But, you know, I think that I would agree with that. I think that it is those traits come easier to women. I hate
yes.
to be sexist about
yeah.
this, but I think they come easier to women
mm-hmm.
than they do to men.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't know whether we were brought up in such a way that it doesn't come to us. I don't think we're hardwired one way or the
no,
other.
No, I think it's social, environmental, engineering.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But And it is difficult for many men to accept or to be vulnerable and to embrace their intuition.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, what is intuition? Intuition is a fact-based decision that's,
right.
that you made so fast you don't even know you accumulated
right.
the facts. I mean,
right,
you know.
Right. Well, you know what? And what's really awesome is if young men want to find out, you know, how to find the right mate, men should learn one thing. Shut your mouth and ask some questions. Ask your mate or the person you're pursuing how they feel, what's going on in their day. We men are so used to, like, holding the conversation. We've been brought up that as leaders, we need to be in control. We need to manage what's going on. But if you're going to walk into a bar and you want to, you know, if you're dealing with, a, you know, an ordinary situation with a man and a woman, and these men walk in all in their, you know, puffed up and ready to, you know, show how macho they are. They got a hard lesson to learn. If they can loosen up and provide some laughter and ask some questions, that will create more dynamic relationships than anything else I know. Just, you know, in that simple way for dating. Boys, close your mouth and ask some questions. and listen while you're at it.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
You know, so
now the tough
really
part
listen,
out.
Right? Don't think about your wrenches and, you know, your objectors tomorrow, the chick at the next bar, that might be a better hit. Sit there and listen and use these, what I would call feminine skills, right? Because
okay.
it doesn't matter whether you're male or female. Men, I think, who are in the coaching business, who reach any level of true competence, have a very feminine passion for interest in seeing things become into its potential. That's a very feminine thing. Why does a mother who has a son who can, like, you know, beat up one kid and then comfort that child, and no matter what happens to that child, that mother still reaches in there and wants to pull out the potential of that child, right? That's a very nurturing, loving energy. Well, we as coaches, we're really, even though we're dudes, we're leaning in to the potential, which is not necessarily in the state of reality yet, but we can see it, we can sense it, we can taste it, we know it's in there, but we have to learn how to draw it out of our clients, right?
You know, one of the sad things is that what draws this out of many of us that is not normal is when we are put into a situation that is totally frightening.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm thinking of the event in Las Vegas this last weekend.
Right.
Okay. And a client of mine was there and came back, flew back. And he said when he came back on Monday in the airport, he said the atmosphere in the airport was so different from what it normally is. Because so many of the people had stayed for the concert or been involved in it or close to it or were touched by it other than just watching it on the news.
Right.
But he said he was so encouraged by the nurturing that he saw people providing to one another.
It's awesome.
You know, whereas normally, you know, you go to the airport, you look at the line, and the men are all thinking about their business, and they're all getting ready. Maybe the women are, too. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not caring about the person standing next
right.
to us. But in this kind of environment, all of a sudden, everybody was willing to step out of their comfort zone and express feelings and express support and concern for one another.
We you know, in a moment like that, I mean, they've measured it through science and stuff. In a moment like that, simplifying it, we become one. But you know, it's already a fact that we're all one. It's all one. However, because we have skin and bones around us, and we all can, you know, dress differently and drive a different this or live in a different place, we have some retarded idea that we're all separate, which is nonsense. We're all connected, intricately connected. So many of us were affected just by last week. I could feel, Doug, I sensed at the end of the evening, and I'm not a news watcher, you know, I don't get infatuated with dramatizations, but there's been a few times now in my life, and this past week being one of them, where I got drawn in, and I became overwhelmed and wept, you know, sitting at my kitchen table in the middle of my work, suddenly overwhelmed. And what I know is that this energy, this thing, my fellow human beings on this small green planet, is moving through me at all times. Everything is moving. I'm not just sitting here. I'm a part of what's happening, right? So when a catastrophe like that happens, I want to position my brain in the most constructive fashion possible so that I'm participating in a productive outcome. No matter how hairy and horrible, it's to be compassionate, not to just be sweet and nice.
Yeah.
Because that's one energy. Yeah. That's a little sloppy energy. I think compassion is a powerful energy of
help. I can relate to it. I was watching it and thinking, why am I just trained as a business coach? Gee, I wish I was a grief counselor.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Wow.
Gee, I would have loved to have the training to be out there and provide real support. Because I see every day what my coaching does for people in ordinary life.
Right.
But what about in those moments when your life is not ordinary? Wouldn't that be phenomenal
to
step out and help?
What about that, mister?
Yeah.
Why not make that offer to a local agency and put yourself out there? Because you have all the tools. It's a chameleon, you know, box of tools that you have that can be applicable. I can see you sitting there and really just really adjusting somebody's consciousness, you know, who might be suffering, and lighten their load by simply your presence and your compassion.
Yeah, it would be a fantastic opportunity to give back.
Yeah.
And so I see, taking us back a little bit to where we were, you know, I can see what you're tapping into, and I can see why, from a social point of view, we are starting to see the men more willing to step into these roles.
Yeah.
It's more acceptable for them to do it.
I have football players, you know, that I work with. I mean, the first time I had a football player, I was like, are you kidding? Can I relate to him? I don't have any shoulder pads, and I haven't broken anything or, you know, jammed my head into it. I mean, can I do this? That football player cried more than anybody I've ever had in a chair before.
Amazing. Look, the producer's waving at me. Let's take a break. We'll go to a commercial, and then we will come right back here in a couple of minutes.
Awesome.
Okay, the break's over. That's a shame, because those of you who weren't here for the break, we were having a fascinating conversation. We sort of took off from where we were on the air, and Camber and I got into this discussion about the identity crisis and the life coaching impact of identity crisis. You want to share that a little bit with the audience, where you were going with that?
Yeah, Doug, it's you know, the more comfortable we are, you know, we all strive for that, right?
Sure.
I mean, that's really what we strive for. Most of us are looking, when is my next great meal? I mean, that's a really, you know, human thing. Am I safe? You know, am I safe? Where am I going to eat?
Maslow's hierarchy. You know, we got to satisfy all those basic needs.
Right, those basic needs. And then once we can plateau and get it all managed, right? And then we just manage, right? We manage until something hairy happens. Something, you know, divorce, death, being terminated, getting fed up and then quitting, the loss of a child. A parent. Some people, I mean, just a parent alone can really wipe some people out. I call these inflections, you know. There's these inflections in life. And when they happen, we have to step out of what we have been managing, and suddenly a spiritual quest kind of opens up, you know. And in this moment when you just open, something opens you up, like having a heart attack and having your chest opened up. It can feel like that when you're hitting these moments. You suddenly ask, you know, who am I? Am I my college? No, I am not my college. Am I my neighborhood? No, you're not your neighbor. Am I my career? Am I the husband? No, you're not the husband. These are all particles of who you are. These are things that you have decorated your life with. These do not define you. So I find out that when I ask my people, who am I ask them to say that. Who am I? They are dumbfounded.
That's a tough question for most people.
Because they'll use the things. I am a doctor. I'm a doctor of medicine, or I'm a I'm an architect, or I'm a television no, you're not. No, you're not. No. Who are you? Okay, get back to me next week. Because you got to sit with that. Identity, once you break loose like a barnacle off of the pier, and you can get into the flow of the ocean, and you can begin to get a sense of the dynamics that are within you, the sky is the limit. But you need to, of course, attach yourself so you're just not being tossed about by the currents and the times and the dramas. You need to go, okay, out of, like, who am I? I am a coach, morning, noon, and night. My job is to bring out the ultimate potential and to keep my people safe and to have them be successful. That's who I am. I can't turn it off, right? I don't just walk in out the door of my office and turn into some other dude. This is really, now I'm doing 100% who I am. Is a transformationalist? I don't know, it sounds weird, but...
See, and the key thing there, which I want to make sure people don't miss, is okay. When you speak that powerfully about who you are, mm-hmm. I am a coach,
mm-hmm.
It's not because that's where you're making your revenue.
No.
You know, it's not because that's what your business card says.
No.
For you, the way you described it is, I am a person who has these attributes, mm-hmm. which coincide with the way you would define a coach.
Correct.
But you could stop being a coach, you would be the same person.
I can't help. Doug, quite frankly, let me just give it to you straight. I did not want to do this. I wanted to be an attorney. First it was an attorney. Yeah. Well, first it was a priest.
You definitely need help.
Right? I could do an argument. First it was a priest. That wasn't good. I didn't want to wear a dress. They don't wear that anymore.
Yeah, you could.
I missed it. And then it was a lawyer. And then I decided, you know, in my teenage days, I wanted to be a manufacturer. I mean, I grew up in a neighborhood where everybody was the vice president of something, you know. And so I associated that was life, that was reality. So my ultimate job was I wanted to run a corporation. That's what I wanted to do. And everything I've disclosed to you reveals my intention. I was a business,
sure.
You know, co-creator. I dig that, right? But in it all, I was, since 21 years old, I'm 56. At 21, I started sitting down with another human being and being very fascinated by... And the people, thank goodness, I wasn't just sitting with, you know, anybody. I've been sitting with fascinating people who run our world, who produce the food products that we eat, to produce the petroleum that we get into our cars. I sit with some pretty fascinating people.
Aren't they all?
No, not all of them.
I think everybody is fascinating.
They are.
I think some people just hide it.
Well, some people never got to... And here's the difference, Doug. The people I'm referring to are people who said, oh, I'm going to do this. I mean, and they got some grit, and they had to do it, right?
Okay.
Well, there's many people who... And it's all equal. You know, are they all fascinating? Yes. I can sit with somebody who bakes, and because I'm not a baker, but I'm fascinated by recipe, by different ingredients that go in to make up something fabulous. And that they do that on the spur, and they do it out of love, and they share it with their neighbor. I'm, like, jealous of that person. So, yes, everybody is special, and everybody is unique. But not everybody has to grovel to get where they are. Those are the people that I really am fascinated by. So that's how I would define it. People who really have to put their skin in their...
They've made a commitment.
They made a commitment to something bigger, and they went after it. And that's typically the person, Doug, who comes to me. It's not the more quieter person.
And what do your clients generally come to you for? What are they looking for out of coaching?
Well, you know, oddly enough, there's been a turn in my business, Doug. that I didn't ever expect, which is couples. That really added a new flavor for me. Not that I'm really answering your question specifically, but
oh, that's interesting. I've only coached couples a couple of times.
Yeah, well, and that works. A couple. You had a couple. You did a couple of times. That worked out. Twos are in the fortune for you. And couples. So, as an example, what would a couple come to me for? The people between 20 and 34, they're actually coming to me, Doug, to get together. I mean, how smart is that, right? Yeah. But I also have people in their 40s who are wanting to get together, and they've been together before in a contract of marriage, but they need to figure out why their spouses are getting upset with them, and because women have a lot more liberty now, everybody needs to be participating properly in their behavior in order to win the other, you know, whether you're gay or straight. Everybody is seeking, and the many different other things that are out there, but mm-hmm. everybody is seeking to be loved. But now, it's not just about being loved for what you can provide, but there's more equality between every single person. So we got to deal with our stuff now. And most people are dealing with what they learned from their mother and father, quite frankly, on a very Freudian basis. So if you've never dealt with the situation between your mom and your dad and what it meant to you, or that your uncle or your aunt who raised you, your grandmother, a lot of people were raised by somebody else, and you don't deal with that mess, it's gonna be in your relationship. And your relationship will not be fabulous until you unearth that stuff and iron it out and deal with it.
But don't you think this is and this is what I hear you saying, I know you don't disagree, but don't you think that this is a huge change socially that we are seeing younger people mm-hmm. being as focused in trying to identify who am I, mm-hmm. what's important to me, mm-hmm. who do I want to be, not what do I want to be.
Right.
You know, whereas the prior generations, you know, we were more focused on what I'm going to be.
Yeah, and how much can I make?
Yeah.
Can I make enough doing that?
Yeah.
To satisfy the needs of a family. And that was really, you know, that's the dinosaur, Doug, now. That model is a dinosaur model now. But it's not just for younger people. It's for all of us. We all are able now to make those choices.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know? But we have to deal. So, like, you're a business coach, you know, and I really admire business coaches because, with all due respect, a business coach is dealing with a very specific, targeted part of that human being in their daily business culture, right? Am I wrong? Or
a little bit wrong.
Okay, so enlighten me.
Okay,
so tell me, how much broader does a business coach go?
People come to a business coach because that is for a business reason.
Okay.
And the business reason that they come to them for is a socially accepted, you could say it out loud, you could mention it in a cocktail party, and it's very comfortable, and nobody would think twice of you,
mm-hmm.
the same way if you went to a tax consultant or had somebody help prepare your taxes,
right.
or an attorney. So I'm going to a business coach. But I have never had a business client
mm-hmm.
that we didn't talk about their life situations to. That's not why they came to me.
Right.
That's not what I'm pushing on them.
Right.
But if you develop the coaching relationship mm-hmm. and we know and trust one another mm-hmm. and I'm looking for what's important to you, what do you need to talk about that's going to help you feel better about what you're doing?
Right.
That's going to frequently broaden out past business. So,
yeah.
Your perception, I would modify it a little bit.
Yeah, good.
Okay.
Yeah. Modified. I am modified.
Man, that was an easy
Told you, I'm a yes man. No, but if it makes sense, it makes sense, and it does. And that has been, you know, my concern. I've been really, like, interested because I don't sit in a corporate environment and do my coaching. Why? Because they're not calling me. Right?
Yeah.
That's not who's calling me. Why aren't they calling me? Why aren't they calling me, Doug? I don't know. But I think it's because I primarily deal with such raw stuff that it's We're not there yet, Doug. We're just not there. Like you said, you can be in a party and you can say, I got a business coach. And everybody's like, oh, that's so cool, dude. Like, you know, what's going on? That was a dude, not a Doug.
Yeah.
That's my street talk.
It.
Okay, good.
It.
Just checking. And you can do that. But there's still a little bit of a stigma, not unlike a psychiatrist or something. However, it is changing dramatically. But I tell our clients, when you walk out that door, you walk out of that door and you go tell your family you're seeing a life coach. And you say it with some spit and vinegar. Because that means you're smart enough to look outside yourself for some direction. And you're willing to look at yourself, you know, through another person's viewpoint and really say, is that who I am? You know, who do I want to be? Is it working for me? That's a big question, right?
Yeah.
Is your life working? If it's not, I want to be able to call Doug. I want somebody to call that I can trust, because the big thing is trust.
Yeah.
Big thing is, can I, as a business leader, for a moment, because I think the more people you're responsible for, Doug, the bigger your company, the less likely you are to trust interpersonal relationships. You got to keep a really tight circle. Because you cannot just leak information that's personal and not be concerned that it can come back in your face. So the more people we're responsible for, I think we're a little bit more tight-fisted with who we're dealing with and who we're sharing our stuff with. But as we do become more vulnerable, Doug, our big leaders become more vulnerable, I think they'll become more powerful. Because it's only secrets that nail us. It's only secrets that people get blackmailed for. If you're willing to be who you are and do it properly with proper self-esteem and humility, you can do more good and create more profit than any secretive person can and live well.
Let me back up a little bit on something you said there that kind of caught me.
Okay.
You mentioned to me you play tennis.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Have you ever had a tennis coach?
No, sir.
No.
I haven't.
Are you self-taught?
Yeah, and it probably shows in my game. My game is not real tight.
You've cemented. There goes my example.
Oh,
right out
my
the window.
Goodness. I'm sorry. But I'm looking to get a coach.
Looking to get a coach.
I am. I'm thinking
so
about it.
I can work with that. So
okay.
Why are you looking to get a tennis coach?
Because my form sucks.
Because your form sucks.
Yeah.
So you want to get better.
I want to get better with my backhand, and my serving, my form. So, you know, I do a lot of snooping on the court, you know. I'm always lit. But unfortunately, they're always teaching like six-year-olds. And so I'm not getting some really good stuff. But not that there's not a lot of good stuff in six-year-olds. But, you know, the mentality.
Prove your grip. Don't,
right?
Don't let it slip.
No, and I just had to ask somebody the other day, what is the proper way? I've been holding it like this for 25 years. Yeah, so... Now I'm looking for, I would openly want to coach for that.
Where I was going with that is
right.
That there is such a misconception that people go to a coach, life coach or business coach,
yeah.
because they aren't working.
Mm.
They have a problem.
Mm.
Many people go to coaches, whether it's a business coach, a life coach,
right.
a voice coach,
mm-hmm.
to get better something they already do.
I'm glad you said that. Yes.
So, I mean, I have a coach.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a coach since I've started coaching.
Nice.
Because I know I can always get better.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And sometimes I need reinforcement that I'm doing the right thing.
Right.
Sometimes I need a little correction that I'm not doing the right thing. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
I just need to be told, hey, you're doing good.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the drawbacks to one of the handicaps that mm-hmm. coaches deal with,
mm-hmm.
life or business,
mm-hmm.
is the misconception that you've got to be broken to go to one.
That's an excellent point.
And I don't mean to jump on you, but it was just sort of slipped in there that...
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, frankly, after we get out of the little bit of a mess that kind of... Because sometimes it's just really the mess that instigates the relationship, you know?
Yeah.
But as I revealed to you, I have clients I've had for 28 years. They're not in a mess.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And
They wouldn't have lasted 28 years.
No, right?
Yeah.
And if they are, they should have fired me a long time ago. But, no, the beautiful thing is I am clear that as a creator... If you admit that you are a creative human being, and that means constant creation, you're solving problems, maybe you're getting a new property, maybe you're getting a new business, maybe you're starting a new hobby, People who are really alive and enjoying their lives are creating constantly. So as long as you're creating another business, or you're trying to improve and refine what you got going, or remodel your, whatever you're doing, you're alive and you're creating something. You are best by having a coach, so that when you get into these little tiny weird places that you don't want to discuss with your husband or your wife or whatever the case might be, or your dog's not giving you good advice, then it just makes things grow that much bigger and faster.
Yeah.
And it's fun for the coach, too.
We had a woman we talked to a few years back on the show, and she was a professional ice skater.
And
she was not, how do I say this? She had been doing it for a number of years.
Okay. She was a senior skater?
I don't want to go there.
Okay.
But she was constantly using a coach, refining her techniques, making them a little bit better.
Right.
To keep, you know, because there's no end to, as an ice skater, how perfect can you be?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I think everything's that way.
Right.
And to me, that's what coaching offers. And I think people see it more easily in business coaching. They can grab the concept that my business isn't failing. That's not why I hired a coach. I think a coach might help me make it better.
Right.
But I don't know that they see that as clearly when they go to a life coach.
Well, I don't either. And I would like to see that change.
Yeah.
Because again, everything is connected. So the fact that you can, we have so many instances where top-notch people who have earned a lot of kudos from us kill themselves, or suicide rates are sometimes up now more than ever, especially with our young people, with all the stuff that it's available, right? Because the one thing, Doug, we have the most incredible technology. We're sitting in a building that uses the word tech. I mean, tech is like the sexiest thing in the world, right? But it's our human development that is minuscule compared to our technological developments. So if we just lean into the conversations, Doug, the conversation about who am I, right? Very strictly elementary, indeed. Nonetheless, it will begin a conversation amongst all people that begin to go, okay, who am I and how can I bring this to the table of my corporation, to my board of directors, to my home, to my courtyard, and begin to unleash some of the things that are just your interpersonal most thoughts and begin to integrate it into the rest of your life can be a really great way to jack things up and get things moving ahead.
I'd love to do a survey of the general population and find out, when was the last time you questioned yourself as to who you are? What's important to you? I mean, there's those points in life. You turn 21. It's like, okay, now I'm an adult.
Right.
Who am I? What am I going to do?
What do I
you
drink?
You get married. You have kids.
Right.
There's some of those key sort of chronological
benchmarks.
Social benchmarks.
Mm-hmm.
But really, why aren't we asking that every day?
Right. Know? And especially once you get past 40, I think if you get past 40, you should be thanking the Lord above, right? Or whatever above. Because you get through 4 decades, life just starts to get fascinating.
Yeah.
Those first three decades are painstakingly, you're really kind of on a track that you've been taught. But at 40 to 50 to 60, the seasons change. Each decade is a season to me. It's a season for rejuvenation, for reconsideration, and for how are we participating? Is it still working for us? So each decade you get to ask yourself that question and reinvent yourself.
Cool. Hey, look, we're about to run out of time here. Before we wind up, how do people get a hold of you?
Oh, well, I am what I am, camberhill.com.
Camberhill.com?
So, yeah, camberhill.com is my website.
Okay.
And my number, my coach, that's my phone number, 562-MY-COACH, which is 562-692-6224. Again, it's 562-692-6224. But, I'm so clever. It's like, what do my clients think when they need to, how do I get a hold of my coach? Oh, that's right. That's the number.
So what kind of clients are you looking for these days? Who would you like to have listening to the show that would call you up and say, hey, Camber, I got to talk.
Well, anybody who my voice speaks to is the person I should tend to. If I could cherry pick, I just like watching my work reach more people, Doug, really. I would like to play a bigger influence on the way in which our business world is functioning. And maybe I'm being childish.
Oh, no, I think it's a great goal.
But do you think I'm a fit, Doug? You would know. Can you sit here across the table from me with the laughter you've heard come out of my body and with my ideas? Do you sincerely think that I could be of help?
To
the corporate conditions, to improving the...
Yeah, the easy answer is to some and to some not.
Yeah, right.
But, I mean, any one of us has that.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some that I'm not a fit because they look at me and they go, gray hair. Can't fit, you know?
Well, and, I'm with you on that. And I'm not against your gray hair. Having your gray hair.
And that might not be necessarily a younger person. It might be another older person that's sitting there with no hair looking at me saying that. So I don't know where they get off.
Right?
But you know, so everybody's got a image of who they're going to be comfortable with.
Right.
But
right.
You started out the show talking about relationships.
Right.
And I think that's the key to getting clients anywhere.
Yes.
Can you get in an environment, create a situation where you can start to develop a relationship? Because once I talk to you, I'm more interested in you than I was when you walked by and said hello first.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yeah, it's a guy that laughs a lot. Laughs loud.
Right.
That doesn't do anything for me. But once we had a conversation, then, okay, now I'm interested. That's kind of crazy ideas. I'd like to know more about
them. Good.
So yeah. I think relationship is what the goal should be, not who's the stereotype that I would fit in with.
Right. I hear you. And you hit the nail on the head, Doug. I'm a relationship expert.
Yeah.
That's really my shtick, is that I'm here to improve and develop the relationship issues that surround every single human being walking on this planet.
Okay, that's great.
Okay.
Camber, welcome to the Coaching Show, Coaching Perspective Radio Show community. Thank you for being with
my
us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Doug.
Have a great evening. Well, look, if you're listening to our podcast, thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some great guests. And speaking of guests, we've only got 10 shows left for 9 shows now for the rest of the year, and there's only a couple left that are open. So I guess if you want to be on the radio show, we'll be talking. Too late. No. what a lousy commercial that is. If you want to be on the show, we'll be scheduling people for next year soon. So you'll have plenty of time to get ready. Well, look, I hope you enjoyed the show today. We have got some great guests lined up. Go to the website. You can see it. Besides Camber, we've got Susan Howington coming. We've got Tina DePayne, Ray Amir, Pat Fusco, Michelle Hensley, Joy Castiles. We have some coaches ranging from sensitive coaches to people talking about technology and all kinds of different things. So I hope you enjoyed the show today. Our goal, as always, is to have discussions that provide you with new ideas and information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals. I'll be back with you again next week at our new time at 3 p.m. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug Gefeller.